What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care, so sit back, relax, and defocus.
Hey guys, welcome to this week's edition of the Defocus Media Podcast. This is Jennifer.
And I'm Daryl.
We've got a really exciting guest on today. Dr. Tanya Gill is joining us from out in California. How are you, Dr. Gill?
Hi guys, I'm doing great.
So we're here discussing the kind of amazing professional career you put together so far. You're a business owner. You had a really breakout year as an optical retailer this past year, named to Envision Magazine's America's Finest Retailer of the Year in Optical. And you also have your own product line of eyelid cleansers. So let's just break it down. I mean, as a private practice owner, how do you feel like you got so successful?
Hi, everybody. So excited for this podcast. Thank you for inviting me. So keys to success, you know, there's so many ingredients that make up me and so many ingredients that make up Oakland Vision Center. So I just have these crazy ideas, and I think what makes it different and successful is that it's different. So what I decided long ago is I took a couple business classes, and I decided that I was going to stop advertising other people's brands and start creating one for myself. And that was, I would say, the number one thing that I did was just start creating a brand for myself.
That is so key. When Daryl and I work with social media for doctors, and it's really easy for other doctors when they're thinking about social media to just post advertisements of the optical brands that they're carrying. But that doesn't in any way define your space. So when you were thinking about branding yourself, how did you come up with that brand image?
So we definitely had a mission statement. I got taught in school that having a mission statement kind of guides your practice into how you want to grow and the future. But what was really important, and I saw that Nike did it so well. One day I walked into a Nike store and everything had its logo on there and everybody was buying it and they were buying the brand. And, you know, I thought, my practice, well, I did have a 22-year-old girl look at me and say, "What's your brand, Dr. Gill?" She was taking some class in school. And I thought, I don't know what my brand is. Should I have one? And that's where the conversation really started. So got my staff together and said, we don't need just a mission statement. We need a brand. And then it became a tagline. And then it just grew into so many things. So we thought weeks and weeks, and then we finally came up with we, because we, as the women in my office, were the we, and then we just loved eyes, so that's where it came from, and that's where it started.
Dr. Gill, you have done an incredible job with branding yourself. I've been following you for about 1 to 2 years now, and what I really like is how you've utilized Instagram, Facebook, you know, social media platforms to put your brand out there. How did you even get started with social media? Can you give us some background on that?
Yeah, it's, I started in 2014 in January, and we were awful when we started. I think when you start to do anything new or different, there's a learning curve. So some of the old images, the initial images, if you look at them, they to me, in my brain, they just don't look like anything like they do today. And we're still getting better and still improving. But you got to start somewhere. And so when it comes to social media, if I could give advice to myself 2 years ago, is just stick with it. So we were posting 3 images every single day, Monday to Sunday, and that's just what I said I was going to do. I'm not good at this. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm just going to start. And so now I have a magic formula that I'm more than happy to share with y'all. But yeah, it takes work, but it's consistency.
Well, do you want to talk about your formula?
Yeah, I'm actually writing an article for Eye Care Business on this exact thing, my secrets to social media. And so the number one thing is having the right apps on your phone to edit photos. So, excuse me. So creating beautiful images, we're all in the business of selling clarity. So I think Instagram, Facebook, really good photos, does a really good job of selling a brand, but also just portraying as a glossy brochure to your patient, like, hey, don't you want to come see us? Don't you want to belong? And we've actually gotten a lot of patients that way, just from social media photos alone.
How many Instagram followers do you have right now?
Yeah, so last time I checked, we're maybe about 5,500 for Oakland Vision Center and maybe at 11,400 for We Love Eyes. Wow. And I'm really proud to say that for both accounts, I have not bought any followers. They're all 100% organic growth.
You really do feel that having that many followers on Instagram, it has equated to patients actually coming into your office.
Yes. There's a magic formula to Instagram. So what we do is we'll post, you guys have, I'm sure have read a lot of my silly glasses quotes. So we write a quote every fifth photo. We post a picture of a patient wearing something that they actually purchased. I think that's important. When you put on glasses on somebody and they're just trying on glasses, it's not theirs. And it didn't feel authentic to post pictures of glasses that weren't there. So every fifth photo, we make sure we post somebody that bought a pair of glasses with their smile. Every fifth photo, we make sure we post donuts or some type of food. I mean, this is the magic formula of how we post. And every fifth photo, we post some type of layout. And then there leaves room for one or two photos, and we really sell the lifestyle brand. Maybe it's a picture of a bicycle. Maybe it's a picture of me in front of, you know, graffiti on the street. But we're really pushing that lifestyle brand as well. Keeping a poll, when you sign up for an eye exam, I loved your Instagram is one of the options they can click. So that indicates to us that they're an Instagram patient. But I have to say, out of all the patients that have been referred to my office, the Instagram patients have been the most lucrative. We had a pair of Orgreen frames, and we bright blue Orgreen frames. Nobody would ever buy those frames. We bought it as a showpiece, and we put it on Instagram. We actually had somebody come in who loves bright blue, baby blue. She came in and said, she showed me the photo, or she actually commented. You could go back into our feed and read her comments. She's like, are these still available? We're like, yes, because nobody would buy them. But she came in, tried them on, she took them, and it was $1,200. No insurance, nothing.
Wow.
We have this a lot where patients will say, this is my frame, they'll come in. Sometimes we have it, sometimes we don't. But when we have it, they buy it on the spot. And that's been pretty powerful in the sense that I don't feel that they're just buying the frame. They're really buying that whole brand. Like, they feel good and comfortable about coming in to buy that item. It's like Apple, right? You look at their advertising, I'm just going to go in and buy my iPod when I'm ready because I know that's what I want. So we have a lot of patients like, oh, I've been dying to come see you. Now that my insurance benefits have kicked in, I'm going to go see you. It's very powerful.
That's fantastic. So we talked about Oakland Vision Center, and then you also have a hugely popular We Love Eyes account. I mean, how did you get into eyelid hygiene and makeup removers?
So I blame my husband for this. I blame him for just about anything. But when we started dating, he would get these really bad chapped lips, terrible lips. I mean, I'm an amazing kisser, but not that amazing. So I was like, what's wrong with you? And so I figured it was an allergy of some sort. And so we did this whole allergy thing. And then we found out that he was allergic to sodium lauryl sulfate. So we had to get rid of all the cleansing items in our house. And we, how would you say, like, substitute it with, like, Whole Foods friendly products because they didn't have sodium lauryl sulfate. And that's the one thing that got me thinking. And I still have a huge dry eye practice at my office, and I'm thinking, oh, I do a lot of lid foam cleansers. I do a lot of eyelid hygiene. What are those ingredients about? And I checked out the ingredients, and I thought, oh, my goodness, I might be creating a problem when I'm trying to fix it. And so I went to Whole Foods. That was my first resource, and there was nothing that was sodium lauryl sulfate free for the eyes, for washing the eyelids or removing makeup. So I went to my kitchen and just started kind of experimenting. And in about a week, I had the start formula. It took me a couple months, but I made it in my kitchen.
So with the products that you have right now, could you kind of just go over the three products that you have and who's the right patient for each product?
Sure. Yeah, I got three products. It started out as just one, the foaming cleanser, because that's what I really emphasize, but it soon became a makeup remover. And then after the makeup remover, it became the cleansing oil. So for patients that come in my office that need, and I think this is like the the easiest way to make it clear is if somebody is using baby shampoo for their eyelids, I recommend using the cleansing oil as step one and then the foaming cleanser as step two. And I love the idea of cleansing oils. Cleansing oils have been around in Asia for many, many years. Japanese women, Chinese women, we love to remove our makeup, clean our face with oils. And so I kind of just used that concept and translated it to the eye. And it turned out that the cleansing oil worked really great for blepharitis, because we know that on the eyelids, it's just caked with sticky epithelial cells, oils from the skin, and then bacteria. So in order to remove that really tough debris, you don't need just a foaming cleanser. You need something oil-based to remove it, and that was the concept. The cleansing oil has a higher, stronger concentration of tea tree oil than the makeup remover. But in general, for blepharitis, MGD, we use cleansing oil, foaming cleanser.
So Dr. Gill, clearly you must have a love for chemistry.
So in college, in undergrad, my favorite subject, and I almost majored in chemistry because of this, was organic chemistry. So kind of playing around with these ingredients and chemicals was, it actually felt very comforting to me. I really enjoyed making all the formulas, turning my kitchen into a lab. It was a lot of fun. And I think that organic chemistry course that I took for a year, Chem 3A, 3B, I'll never forget you, changed my life. I didn't know it at the time.
I was never a big fan of organic chemistry. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't my thing. But I'm glad that you made use of it. What about you, Jennifer? Were you a big fan of organic chemistry as well?
Well, I never really put together that I could cure blepharitis with it. So maybe I ought to pay more attention if I knew that.
So when I took organic chemistry, I really thought this stuff is fun, but this is not really, you know, it's kind of worthless information, but it's just fun to learn and do. But actually, it really helped. Who knew? My mother was right.
Speaking of blepharitis, I mean, are there things that you hear doctors telling patients that just make you cringe, like products that they're using that they really shouldn't be?
I think, like, you know, let me confess, I have been recommending baby shampoo since 1999. So, yeah, there are things that I have now in hindsight, look back at what I was doing, and yeah, I kind of cringe and think, oh, but I think being a doctor is about learning. That's why they call it practicing medicine. So we just keep practicing and practicing and practicing until it gets better and better. And so, yeah, do I recommend baby shampoo anymore? I absolutely do not, now that I have an alternative. But when other doctors recommend baby shampoo, I'm like, hey, you might want to check out, you know, the ingredients of baby shampoo and, you know, figure out if it's right for your patients.
Dr. Gill, one of the frequent questions that I get asked in the exam room by women are, what kind of makeup should I be wearing? Do you have any recommendations or suggestions? Do you have any resources that us men could actually utilize in the exam room to answer these questions?
Yeah, you know, I think the less, let's just say if a woman wears makeup, wants a recommendation, healthier makeup tends to be makeup that's less toxic, that's vegan, more natural. And there's actually a great resource, and I can email this name to you, but it's called Petite Vore, and it's a website where you can go on and not just buy products for makeup, but you can buy products for the body and the home. They're all natural and honest products. So it's Petite Vore, PetiteVore.com. That's where I buy all my eye makeup, and that's where I send my patients. And they have hundreds of brands to choose from, and each brand, there's a nice explanation of ingredients and what it offers. So I think sending them to that website has been very valuable for my practice.
So it seems like you develop a niche area in optometry. Do you have any competitors? And if you do, how are you handling your competition?
I'm sure there's competitors in the market. I'm just honed in on what I'm doing, spending all of my energy on what my messaging is and what I'm doing. Currently, it's overwhelming for me. We Love Eyes is a company of one person, and that would be me. So in between patients dilating, in between appointments, I'm returning emails, I'm updating my website, I'm making sure orders go out on time, I'm basically troubleshooting. It's been overwhelming. I need to get to 100 wholesale accounts so I can afford to hire somebody part-time to help me with these tasks. But I'm struggling, but I'm doing the best that I can. But that's why they call it a startup.
It's really amazing that you're balancing that business that's growing so quickly with full-time patient care too. So I'm very impressed. I don't know how anybody burns it at both ends like what you're doing.
And social media. I mean, that's a full-time job. It could take up a lot of your time if you don't plan properly.
I have the social media thing like trimmed down and kind of it's automated now. So what we do in our office and part of the social, back to the social media secrets, is I used to curate and take 100% of the photos and write 100% of the captions. But what was great was everybody in my office got really into it. So now we actually have 3 people taking photos and 1 person writing the captions. So we take photos, we put them into a Dropbox. The person who's amazing at writing captions, because she's Kisu, she's been so amazing at just capturing my voice. She's amazing. She'll grab the photo from the Dropbox, write a caption, and post it. So we're pretty automated in that sense. So we have enough material usually for like 3 to 4 weeks. But whenever we see something, yeah, my camera's always with me. If I'm eating something, I take a photo. If there's a patient that's picking up their glasses and, you know, consents, of course, to being on social media, they take a photo. And it's funny because sometimes we'll get patients, I can't wait to be on Instagram. They want to be a part of it. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
So it's pretty amazing how you have your patients engaged before they walk in and out of the office. Now, I know before you mentioned a consent form. Can you tell us a little bit more about the consent form and what is actually on the consent form? Because there's a lot of newbies that are actually listening and our followers, and they have no clue where to even get started with social media. So what advice and tips can you give in regards to that?
Yeah, so we're pretty strict on the approval. So when the patient signs up for their eye exam, there is a portion of the intake form. Would you consent to being on? And it lists all the options, any social media. And I've, of course, I'm really active in blogging. So any of my blogs, website, and I happen to work in an area that's very techie. So we usually get a yes on that.
Okay.
But when it comes time to actually taking the photo, sometimes people check no and they change their mind. Sometimes people check yes, they change their mind, but in general it's a yes. And we verbally ask them again, and is this okay? And I explain to them verbally, hey, this is what's going to happen. It could, and they're like, where is it going to be? I'm like, it's possibly be anywhere in the internet, because we're going to put it maybe on our website. You're probably going to make the top 10 glasses blog. And they get really excited about that. It's super fun. But one thing we do is we never, ever, ever, unless the person has a business and wants us to help promote it, which we always do for them, if they request, we never mention the patient's name or any type of information regarding them. Sometimes I see the doctor say, Jane picked up her glasses and she loves them. And it's like, we never even mention the patient's name. We just make a quote about our brand, like all our captioning revolves around our brand, and we really stick to it, even if it's a picture of a patient.
So one thing that I love about social media is that it gives more of a family-like feeling. So when my patients come in, I've noticed they're more in tune to what I have going on with my personal life, as well as what's going on in the office. And I feel like it's just because it's a way to have the patient stay connected full time rather than seeing me once a year. They see me numerous times over the year just through social media. So do you feel like you have more of a family-like feeling in the office? Do your patients feel like you're more approachable than you were prior to social media?
Before we were really active in social media, the patients that came to my office already felt like my family. They're dedicated patients. I love them. They love me. And it's a really amazing relationship that I have with them. But having said that, with social media and the Instagram in particular, it's like people want to join the family.
Right.
I think that's the difference there. People want to join the brand. They want to join the family. They want to be a part of it. People will come in and, you know, like I said, they're really excited to buy glasses. They're like, I'm going to get my nails and my hair done. And I'm like, oh, if you get your nails done, we'll do an Instagram shot of your nails too. But they're just really excited. It's been a lot of fun.
It's awesome. And what a good idea, because you're using social media in such an individual and personalized way with the patient. It really does feel like they are a part of your account. And I don't think anyone else is really doing it that way right now.
Thank you. And you know, Jen, you gave me the best idea. I read something that you wrote recently. And when I read that one sentence, I completely changed how I did the social media photos. Do you remember that comment you made about having the patient post the photo on their own account has more value than the business? Yes, you said that. You're amazing. I read that and it just, so now we take photos. I'll edit the photo right in front of the patient and I'll let them know, I'll send it to you. Can you post it on your Instagram? And that's what we do now. So thank you for that, Jen.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad I had a good idea.
It was an amazing idea. So it's been awesome.
So I want to kind of say this to everybody who might be listening. When Daryl and I first had ideas to do a podcast, you were one of the first names that came up. So we asked you to be on our podcast way before any of the more adventures that happened this week went down. But we do want to talk about it since it's something that is probably on a lot of minds of optometrists in the industry. We know recently you got a chance to go on Reddit to kind of represent who you are as an optometrist. Can you tell us a little bit about how that invitation happened?
Yeah. So a few weeks ago, I got an email and I was invited by a Redditor, and I'd been on Reddit a few times and I kind of knew what it was. And they said, "Oh, we love your social media presence. We read a blog, really like your style of writing." And they said, "We love that you're contrarian, we love that you're transparent, and we love that you're approachable. Would you do an AMA for us?" And so I was like, I don't know what that entails. So I went online and I looked at Reddit and how optometry is posted or represented in Reddit. And I saw it. I was like, okay, I will do the AMA because I'm going to get asked about 10 to 20 questions at the most. No problem, meaning optometry is not entirely popular on Reddit. So weeks went by and I kind of deferred. I had to basically cancel a whole day of clinic just to do this Reddit thing for these like 10 to 20 questions, because according to the Reddit person, I would get maybe a question in the morning, but the questions would last all day and I didn't want to be distracted. So what was interesting was the day on August 9th when I did do the Reddit, I was really mentally prepared to get 10 to 20 questions. And what little did I know is I was going to get 10 to 20 questions every minute. Between posted questions and questions in the private message, I got more messages in my private email for Reddit than I did posted, which was very overwhelming. So my immediate thought was like, oh my gosh, I got to answer all these questions. I don't want to feel anybody's ignored. I mean, I'm definitely a people pleaser. And yes, I still wanted to be contrarian. I still wanted to be contrarian. I still wanted to be transparent. I still wanted to be approachable. And some things definitely went well. And I think if I could do it all over again, I would pre-write a lot of the answers that I know I would be getting about the internet, about contact lens wear, so that there was no confusion. Yes, my answers could have been more thoughtful, and you know, I'm still fixing those issues. Like, there was a question about how often can I wear daily contact lenses, and the truth of the matter is you can wear a contact lens for as many times as you want. Is it safe? No. Is it dangerous? Yes. I might even add in, are you crazy? And the answer would be yes, if you did it. So I wish like the answers, I pre-wrote the answers so that they would have been more thoughtful, valuable, and represented optometry better. That's my big, 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 big mistake.
So from that takeaway, I mean, I know you got a lot of positive feedback from the Reddit host because of how engaging your responses were to patients, and obviously it was extremely popular, probably much more popular than what they were expecting for an optometry post to be. The kind of feedback that you got from other optometrists, I know, has been difficult. I mean, was there anything that you'd like to say to people who felt not so happy about the things you had to say?
Yeah, you know, it's a mixed bag. You know, I think part of my feeling is, you know, on one hand, I'm getting all these messages from editors that are like, oh my God, this is amazing. And it was really about just helping them with a lot of it was with refractive surgery questions or just giving them reassurance or letting them know like, hey, you probably have this, but you need to be diagnosed, go back to your eye doctor. And they were very appreciative. And then on the other hand, you know, optometrists were not very happy with me, and I completely understand why. There's a few responses and some language that probably should have been edited, but I really got caught up in the moment. But truly, my intentions are to support optometry, to grow optometry. And I think part of me, when I started the social media thing, and includes Reddit as well, is when I started, I was kind of scared of the internet. You know, glasses are going online, contacts are going online. Eye exams, sadly, will probably be online one day. And yeah, it's threatening and it's scary. And so I think part of me doing social media and doing this Reddit thing is kind of just to be brave, put it out there, and deal with the online world. So if I could say one thing to optometrists is that, you know, if I did have, you know, another opportunity to go on Reddit or any online forum for that matter, that I would definitely pre-write answers and make sure the responses reflected our industry like they should have been.
Well, you know the famous saying, hindsight is 20/20. I'll take my hat off to you, Dr. Gill, for even jumping out into the world of Reddit and just social media. I mean, all this stuff is new to us as optometrists, but the one thing that I did take away from your Reddit experience is that patients listen, and they're out there looking for answers. So I think this is something that all of us as optometrists should look at and capitalize on. We need to be more proactive in regards to social media and learn from the experience that Dr. Gill experienced.
Thank you. And I do feel that, especially in that internet space, it's a learning curve. It's not easy, and it's meant to be fun, but it's not always that way. Even when I started out my Instagram, we didn't know what we were doing, and I felt very lost and in the clouds after the Reddit thing as well. I realized I didn't know what I was doing, and I was probably not qualified to be overwhelmed with hundreds of questions in a matter of half an hour. That was very stressful, and I did not anticipate that. Although I was still very excited and I wanted to do the best that I could.
I do think that your personality came across really strongly on the Reddit forum, and it's the same personality that you have when we talk to you in person on your social media accounts. So I don't think that if in any future time you get to represent yourself, that you should feel like you need to change like who your personality is, even if your message is delivered in a different way in the future.
Yeah, you know, I do things differently. I'm known for doing things differently. I think that's why I won that Envision Award. I don't do everything like everybody else, but at the same time, yeah, I do definitely feel that I need to be my own voice. And this is the thing that really hurt me and wounded me, was I want to be authentic in who I am and who my voice is. And I just want to continue that. And I think the Reddit does match my Instagram, does match my social media, does match my Facebook, does match my blogs, all the articles I've written in business magazines. It's my voice. But to me, being authentic is probably number one, actually.
So Dr. Gill, I'm going to ask you one tough question. Do you think, like, how often would you recommend your patients have an eye exam? Because I think that was one of the comments that upset most optometrists.
Yeah, I think that comment, the BS comment, will go down in infamy forever. I might get a license plate made from it, I think. So my brain, when I answer that question, and I was trying to be as transparent as possible, and I probably, even though I think it, would never write this again on the internet, but I do have some patients that they wear their daily contact lens once a week when they go biking, and they're perfectly healthy patients. That patient I would probably see back in 2 years, and yeah, I kind of think it's BS that we require them to come back in 1 year because that person's doing everything. But I understand that that person could also sleep in their contact lenses, not see me for an entire 2 years, and then something goes wrong. So yeah, so there's one part of me that's a reasonable consumer, and then there's the other part of me that's the reasonable doctor. And so that the message got very, very conflicted there. So in my practice, I actually, this is the irony, my patients all come back in 1 year. They get a recall every year. There are very few patients that get a recall at 2 years. So that was the irony there. So what I said didn't actually match my practice in real life. And the thing about contact lenses, in my territory, I'm the number one writer of daily contact lenses. And when I showed my staff that thing I wrote, they're like, yeah, but you've never allowed a patient to sleep in their lens. I'm like, I know. That's the whole irony of it. So who I am as a doctor, I did a really bad job of being very clear on Reddit that day because I was so completely overwhelmed. I know it's not an excuse, but that's what happened. But yeah, in my own practice, they get a reminder to come back at a year, and they are never, ever, ever allowed to sleep in their contact lens or reuse a lens.
So what do you see as the next big thing for We Love Eyes?
So, you know, when I started the We Love Eyes project, I seriously was just trying to help my patients in my office. And I got some labels and handmade labels. And then I started an Instagram page. And then before you know it, it became this like mini brand and mini business. Not quite a brand, not quite a business yet, but that would be one of my goals. But what's been amazing is initially I'm like, I want to clean all the eyes in the world. That's my goal. And I think it's growing from there. My DNA is changing on that. And what I'd really like to do is really join forces with one of these charity groups that travels around the world and does cataract surgery. So in 5 years, what I'd like to do is hopefully help thousands of people cure their cataracts or cure their blindness and really change the world that way. So that's where I see We Love Eyes. I have this other little dream. I saw on a thread one day about, oh, what makeup and what eye makeup remover should my patients use? I would love to see an update on Tyler's Quarterly with products that are natural and non-toxic, because if you look on Tyler's Quarterly in the back, it says, what mascara should you use? And it'll say Maybelline, which I know is one of the most toxic mascaras. So that would be a dream of mine. I don't know if I would be involved in that because there's so many brilliant women out there that are really forefronting the makeup and eyes. But that would be a dream of mine, a secret dream of mine. If that happened, I would be very happy. So change the world, basically, and update Tyler's Quarterly.
Dr. Gill, with your motivation and drive, I guarantee that you'll have that done in the next few years.
So as a female optometrist, I do want to reach out to you because one of my big passions in this industry is how especially new grad and young females are trying to transition into leaders in our profession, and it's been kind of a hard barrier to break into for most of us. Do you have any advice for female optometrists? Like, how do you make it happen? You own multiple businesses, you're super successful. What do you do to get there?
So it was funny. Somebody else, you know, I think I do things differently just because I steal everybody else's knowledge. But somebody really smart once told me, buy one practice and be amazingly successful at it. So I heard those words and I said, that's what I'm going to do. So for Oakland Vision Center, I just concentrated on the one. I don't think Oakland Vision Center would be as successful if, and I can only speak for myself, if I've divided my love and attention to two different places. Could I? Probably, but I think for the way my brain works, one practice and doing it really well has been beneficial to me. So for new grads, another really great valuable piece of advice is as soon as you can, buy a home in the area you want to live. Buy the biggest home that you can afford. I think that's a really important piece of advice. And number two is buy the largest practice you can afford. If you can buy the largest practice you can afford, you can grow it, double it, triple it, however you want. But I think buying into a practice versus starting cold is it's easier. And I bought Oakland Vision Center, and it did take me about 10 years, but I did double gross receipts, tripled my staff. So it's been a ride. It's been very fun. But for new grads, you know, you got a really fun road ahead of you. I say, do your thing. And I think that's the key, is what you feel and what you want, just go for it. But you got to be different and stick to what you feel is right.
Well, Dr. Gill, we just want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with us today.
Thanks for inviting me. And it's been so much fun. So thank you. And I would love to do this again.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you tell our listeners, how can they get in touch with you? How can they follow you on Instagram? What are your handles? And where can they get We Love Eyes if they want to carry it in their office or just order some for themselves?
Yeah, of course. This is going to be a huge list.
That's good.
We got so much going on. My husband's so funny. He's like, do you really need 12 email accounts? And I'm like, yes, I do. So let's start with Oakland Vision Center, my practice in downtown Oakland, California. So the website is oaklandvisioncenter.com. Instagram is Oakland Vision Center. Facebook is OVC Optometry. Twitter is Oakland Vision. And that's for Oakland Vision Center. For We Love Eyes, the product line, the website is welovexo.com. The Instagram is welovexo. The Facebook is welovexo. And Twitter, welovexo. So if you want to order, and my goal, so anybody's interested in natural, non-toxic eye care for hygiene and makeup removal, my goal is really to get to 100 wholesale accounts. I think right now we have maybe 53 or 54, which I'm very, very proud of. Thank you for the support, everybody. I want to get to 100 so I can hire somebody. It's been so much work. That would be my dream right now, my mini dream. But if you want to order, you just go to We Love Eyes XO and you want to click the wholesale tab. And right now we have this, once you place your first order, you get this really awesome display that my husband actually makes by hand in our garage. So right now everything's very startup, but it's been a lot of fun. So we just went to Home Depot yesterday and bought more wood to make more of these displays, which, you know, it's a lot of work, but at the same time, it's a sign that I have more accounts. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much again for your time, and we look forward to following what you do next.
Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Daryl. It's been awesome.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast, and remember, we keep it 2020 around here, pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.